If you like big brains, the Pacific Science Center is the place to be tonight. You'll find our guest, Chris Mooney, leading a panel of other leading scientists and educators in a forum called Dumb Getting Dumber, The Cost of Scientific Illiteracy. Chris is a journalist who focuses on science in politics. That's like oil and vinegar, I would think. He's in the paper today, by the way. You can read a little question and answer session with the Seattle Times. He's contributed to many magazines and journals and is the author of Storm World, Hurricanes, Politics, and the Battle Over Global Warming. He's also the keynote speaker tonight. PacificScienceCenter.org is where you can check out tickets. Chris Mooney, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
It's great to be on. I'm pretty good.
All right. You're a scientist yourself.
Science journalist.
Okay, slight difference, yeah.
I kind of try to translate what the scientists are saying to the public.
Okay. And I have a good friend who's a very noted scientist at UW, and we talk about these things. Let's start with evolution.
Absolutely.
My friend is nothing, he won't talk about anything if it doesn't pass his grump test, if there isn't actual real science behind it, and yet, I hope he doesn't mind me saying that he belongs to a church and goes to church on Sundays. I have always wondered why people who are of faith think they have to discount evolution and people who are of evolution think they have to discount faith. Can they both live together?
I believe that they can, and I think there's great examples on both sides showing they can. You got great scientists, like your friend, who do not feel they have to banish religion from their lives because they accept evolution. You have the converse. You have, you know, religious leaders who say to their flocks, effectively, you know, evolution is kosher. No problem with evolution. So what you have, the problem is...
Is evolution kosher, really? Does it come packaged?
Actually,
so
yeah.
So I can eat some? Put some on the grill?
It's completely kosher, and you know, you can have...
Can I have evolution on Sundays? I'm confused now.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people can. What you have is two extremes that polarize the middle, you know, and that's what happens.
That seems to be the whole, our entire politics system is all about. Mm-hmm. Extremes that polarize, because they win or lose their battles on the people in the middle. Mm-hmm. And they need to sway us, and in order to sway us, they need to make us dumb, don't they?
It helps.
Yeah,
I mean,
it
reducing it all to a soundbite. And for evolution, that means, you know, reduce it to a war between science and faith rather than having any nuance on the issue.
Let's get to the premise of your talk and the dumb and dumber part. Are we getting dumber?
Well, we're at least...
Is it measurable?
There's different surveys that are used to assess how much Americans know about science, and the results are usually pretty dismal. You know, for evolution, for example, you got almost half the public is a young Earth creationist believing that the Earth is less than 10,000 years old.
Almost half the public believes the Earth is 10,000 years old. But what happens when they go to the Smithsonian or they go to a natural history museum and they see the big jaws of... I mean, shouldn't Jurassic Park have taught them that we're longer than 10,000 years old?
They have their own museums where they can go and see humans in the same display as dinosaurs.
Riding dinosaurs.
Yeah, absolutely. They've
the
got Sarah that covered.
The Sarah Palin Museum. It's a fact. It's out there.
You can't trick them with those real museums.
Now, how much do we need to know? I mean, I know, like, water freezes at 32 degrees. That's kind of a practical thing to know, you know. How much, like... about evolution or what happened 10,000 years ago is applicable
or millions
to my everyday life?
Well, that is a great question, and I don't believe that every citizen has to be a scientist or anything like it, but I think what they need to know is have some sense of how important science is to the economy today, to decision-making on something like global warming, on something like making sure the U.S. remains
Global warming is a bunch of BS created by socialists who want us to spend all our money making things green because it makes them feel better, when really the planet's done very fine so far, and it doesn't... I don't see the temperature rising.
Right.
It was cold yesterday.
Yep. And if we exhale it, how can it hurt anybody?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of talking points.
Plus, we'll figure this stuff out before the planet destroys itself, so why should we hurt our business now? That's the big argument, right?
Well, yeah, there's so much misinformation out there about climate change, you hardly know where to begin. But what I like to point out is that we just went from evolution to global warming. It turns out we knew how global warming worked the same year Darwin published The Origin of Species. Science is that old, 1859. We knew there's a greenhouse effect. Once you got a greenhouse effect, you put carbon dioxide up there, the planet gets warmer. It's real simple. You can't really fight the basic fact.
So it's not hooey.
No.
It's not hooey?
It's,
I thought it was hooey.
It's eminently real.
I will get five emails after the show telling me that global warming is hooey. Do you want to take one of them on now so I don't have to?
I'd be happy to. I mean, I've done hours.
Whoever wants
radio
to call this guy and say stuff. Global warming is hooey, just get your Fox News quote book out and have at him.
Unless you beamed into this room, you ought to know. It's pretty cold out there, and it's May. I mean, it snowed 6 inches.
And by
the
way, the average person, here's the problem. The average person, and I'll be honest, I don't know. I just listen to you experts on either side, and I've got to sit there and decide who I'm going to vote for.
You know, and that's what makes...
There's no way I can know. I mean, I could take your word for it. Granted, you're dressed up nice. You seem smart. You may have a degree, and the guy who's going to call in probably won't sound that smart.
He might sound real smart. That's why these issues are so difficult. Okay. Take somebody like Michael Crichton, you know, a really smart science novelist who didn't accept global warming in his life. So it's real tricky.
1-800-252-1025. You think you could take him? Chris Mooney is here. All right. We'll see if anybody has the cojones to call. You are, let's see, who else are you down on? What about stem cells? Now, stem cells are presented as this, like, magic potion that if we, you know, rub a little stem cell on anything, you'll get better. You'll grow a new arm, whatever you need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one side. Mm-hmm. The other side is it's evil. The only way to get them is to kill human embryos. Mm-hmm. And if we you know, start trading in stem cell futures like hog futures, then human baby embryos are going to be people are going to be good. You know, donating blood and embryos for money.
Yep.
Did I just get both extremes pretty well for you?
Yes, you did. What do all these issues have in common? Tons of misinformation out there.
None of that was true, right?
Yeah.
I love this show. I do.
So. You know, there's been a lot of hype about embryonic stem cells. You know, a lot of people have probably gone too far saying what they can do when it's really basic science. On the other hand, it's not nonsense to say that scientists really want to study embryonic stem cells because they think there's medical potential there.
Right, so, but they also, the whole idea that you have to get them from embryos has been discounted in news reports recently that say, that's hooey, we can get stem cells lots of other ways and we're going to get past the embryo stage pretty quickly. True?
Tricky. New evidence suggesting that maybe there are adult stem cells as well as embryonic stem cells. New evidence suggesting that they can do a lot of what you need for science. But I don't think that the top researchers would, you know, say, you know, we don't need the embryonic ones anymore. So,
but it's all part of our evolution that because as soon as you believe something to be true, it may change. And the actual ways that they research this, you know, stem cells may be just a passing thing where, you know, 3 years from now we can get everything we need from your fingernail.
It's possible.
And then would it be controversial?
No, and I think the stem cell controversy is going away because Obama changed Bush's policy, and, you know...
That may be gone for now. Now, if stem cells could make your erection last 6 hours or longer, we'd have no problem with them, right?
Yeah, okay. But if you injected them,
true, you can
might
make
get
a, it's true, you can make a wallet from discarded foreskin.
So I wouldn't try.
Okay. Let's go to some people that want to say that global warming is hooey. We're taking a few calls. JC is in Buckley. JC, hello.
Yeah, first of all, I have the unenviable position of aligning myself with Bob. But I think as far as global warming goes, I think it's a bunch of hooey because we don't have data on Venus or Mars. I mean, if the globe is getting warmer, is it just us? I mean, what about...
Well, is the question you're asking is, are we causing it, or is there a natural process of evolution? Because I hear that a lot.
More than that, I mean, we've talked about solar storms that are knocking out communication satellites. I mean, there's solar activity that affects our planet. Well, it affects our neighboring planets. I mean, is it just us? That's what I'm asking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You want to say that maybe we don't have enough information to be making the claims we're making?
Well, you know,
I agree with Bob. I mean, I wouldn't want to take my car, even if it's a Prius. I wouldn't want to put it in my garage, start the engine, and sit there with it.
Right. You know that that's not healthy stuff coming out of the tailpipe.
It's not healthy to suck your exhaust. Mm-hmm. I get that. Mm-hmm. So I agree with the environmentalists or whatever. You know, I agree that it's not healthy to be doing things that are anti-environment.
Okay.
I agree with that. But
form of a question, please. What's your question?
I'm being a pragmatic. I'm trying to be pragmatic.
Okay. So what's your question? Ask a question.
My question is, I mean, if there's a climate change, are we really causing it?
You've caused a 2-degree increase with the last 20 minutes of your speech. Right. You put more carbon monoxide into the air. Than
hey, that's a fair question, and that's a scientific question,
right.
Is it not?
Right. And so that is exactly the question scientists...
Okay, you got to listen for the answer now. That's part of this process. Go ahead.
So national academies, you know, across the world, different countries have all looked at that, and they all know that it's a complicated system, and they all have said that even when we look at, you know, solar variability and all the natural things that could be changing, we still can't explain the temperature trend unless we invoke the human causes too.
Okay. That's what lots of scientists say. Of course, the other side will whip out a few scientists...
Yes, they will.
...who are expert witnesses who say differently. Yeah. Thank you,
it's
JC.
Polar bear farts. It's all polar bear farts.
Charlie Incarnation, hello.
Hi.
You're
on. Because I believe in that the planet is, you know, it obviously is getting warmer. The glaciers are melting, all that. But isn't it just the world is going through a change like it normally does? I mean, how warm was it when there were dinosaurs? I mean, it obviously wasn't as cold as it is now, but, I mean, it's always had to be warmer.
The planet's gone through many, many changes, some of them much bigger than the change we're seeing now. But nevertheless, again, the humans are the new factor.
I mean, we're just part of evolution and part of it, you know, we could be part of something bigger or better, I don't know.
We're a disease.
We're a virus on the planet. You can look at
across
it,
the planet, and eating all the resources.
And here's part of the problem, because people want to take the science, and then they want to draw a conclusion with it, mm-hmm. whereas science isn't really that way. Science is just science, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and people want to take little bits of it and marshal it in a political argument, and often not representing what's really known.
Thank you, Charlie. We didn't really get the guy I was hoping we'd get. He'll email me later. Preston, hello.
Yeah, I was just curious. What caused the Ice Age to melt?
Which one?
Well, you know,
he thinks in terms of millions of years.
Right.
I'm not, you know, qualified to, and we don't have time to go through the whole history of the planet's temperature fluctuations because it's real complicated.
But obviously, humans weren't around then.
Right.
And obviously, so, they ain't. No, I wasn't there.
And so there's a lot of things going on in terms of the planet's temperature history. But nevertheless, since the Industrial Revolution, humans have dramatically ramped up the carbon dioxide, and it's really hard to say that that wouldn't have caused the warming. And sure enough, warming is what we got.
Sure.
Okay.
Imagine turning a record player. How old are you?
Huh?
Is he still there? How old are you?
30.
So do you remember record players?
Sure.
Okay, now you got an album on, and it's going to 33 and a third revolutions per minute.
Okay.
Now you turn it up to 78. Same thing's happening. It's just happening a lot faster.
Okay.
That's kind of what humans are doing to the environment. Sure, there have always been cycles going at 33 and a third. But now they're going at 78.
Mm-hmm.
He just pulled that out of his ass. He doesn't know.
Am I right?
It's something like that.
Okay, just because I made it up don't mean it ain't right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Rick in Renton, hello. Yes, Rick.
Yeah, I don't doubt the fact that there's a global warming effect going on, but I hear so much from both sides, and I just wonder if there's any concrete factual information about what percentage of this change is due to mankind.
Well, the scientific consensus on that point, and this is classic scientist speak, is likely mostly caused by humans.
Likely mostly. In other words, there's only evidence. There's nothing concrete. Concrete would assume you were all-knowing, and that would be the one God, which you guys can't prove.
And the only way you can find out is to let us all go on vacation to another planet for a few years and see what happens.
If you had a second planet, completely virginal, like totally pre-prom, and you put us all on that, well, this is the study you'd have to do.
And there'd then be an ad in the paper. Factories, I mean,
that'd be an ad in the paper. Would you be willing to create an equal number of offspring and send them to another planet? We're going to test this out and see how it works. But it would take forever. We'd all be dead by then.
Study pay is $500.
We can't do a controlled experiment with.
But it's a great question. So it sounds like most of the callers are trying to assuage or evade their guilt for being human. Do you hear that?
You know, and it's interesting because, you know, they're not necessarily convinced, but they're also not out-and-out skeptics, like, wanting to fight, because there's a lot of those, too.
You're in Seattle.
Yeah. That's
what you try this in Tennessee. You'd get a whole different kind of call.
Yeah. Keeping with the theme of your speech tonight, you've heard the callers. Mm-hmm. Are they getting dumber?
No, I mean, you know, what I would say is I don't think we're getting smarter.
Boy, that was...
Is anybody, are other countries getting smarter while we're not?
Well, that's one of the main concerns of science today, is that you look at places like India and China, you know, South Korea, they see their future as being investment in science and driving their economies that way. Do we still think that way?
This is a problem for the U.S., and I think I think the conservatives actually should latch on to making money. They love making money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you come up with clean, cheap energy that's more efficient, and you are going to richly rule the world. Okay. And there is a worry that China or India, ironically, the places that pollute the most, but they're also the places that cannot get a car in every garage like we have, or they would choke to death. Mm-hmm. And so they have to develop this stuff. Would we want to develop it first, or do we want them to develop? So let's go to... There's questions are getting really good now. You want to hear some more?
Okay.
We're trying to be quicker with these questions because we want to get a bunch of them on. With us in the studio, author Chris Mooney, a keynote speaker for the forum Dumb Getting Dumber, The Cost of Scientific Illiteracy.
Want to develop it first, or do we want them to...
Are you there, Emily?
Yes.
All right, you got to turn off your radio and speak.
Okay, well, my question is, do you think that we can change, and what do we have to do that? Or do you think that we are doomed? And
as the car left the barn.
The question and answer is definitely maybe.
Yeah.
All right, hold on, I'll let him answer that. Great question, Emily.
Well, you know, I think we can change. There's a lot of uncertainty in terms of, if we're talking about global warming, how bad it will get, how fast, and that's why you have to change fast, because you don't want to really... You know, what if it is the worst case scenario and we're walking into it? But you got a bill before Congress actually has a chance of passing that's going to remake the whole energy system and tamp down the carbon dioxide. So we can change.
Michael in Issaquah, go.
Yeah, hi. Everyone's concerned about it getting warmer as it being bad. But my big question is why would it be bad if it got warmer? I mean, what we know today is going to change, but the Earth's going to take care of that through equilibrium.
All right, so there would be some warming anyway based on the scientific cycles. Michael in Issaquah would like to assuage his human guilt by saying, let's just say it's good. What's wrong with that?
Vast amounts of the world's population live near coastlines. And if you melt Arctic and,
Yeah, you're in Issaquah. That's elevated.
Yeah. Where do you live, Chris?
I actually live in Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay, well, we're both in geographically pretty good shape for global warming, right?
Oh, sure. If you want to move to Buffalo or something, it's going to be beautiful.
Mm-hmm. All right, David in Federal Way. And if you don't want to fish, by the way, because this kills a lot of fish as the ocean currents change, too. David in Federal Way, hello.
Hi, I was just wondering, you were talking about other planets and stuff. Has there been any way to get the temperature like what's been on the moon and see if there's been any changes in that temperature in the last 30, 40 years?
What do we learn about changing other planets or moons from the research we have available?
It's probably a little above my pay grade, but I mean, it's not quite clear why it's relevant because we don't have human industry on the other planets.
Well, if it is going at the same rate as the Earth, then humans would not be responsible at all then, right?
He's
trying.
Right, again, shut a thermometer up the moon's ass, wait 10 years and see if there's a change, then I'll buy your BS.
All right, Dave, I love it. Thank you. These people are all real. Mike in Marysville, hello.
Real what?
Marysville's Mike. Hello, go ahead.
Humans are not the newest change, Chris. I think the money in my pocket is the newest change.
What's new about money?
They're going to force me, because of all this hooey, to buy new things, new cars, new Priuses. They're going to force me to build my house differently. They're going to force me to do all sorts of other things so they can make money.
You are the caller I was hoping for. Okay. In other words, this is all economically driven to create industries that happen to be greener, but it's really to make you spend more money. Is that what you think?
Sky is falling. Absolutely.
Just a bunch of hooey about the sky falling.
But nobody's actually trying to force anybody. If you look at the kinds of policies we're talking about,
it's coming.
This is just a crack in the door.
Let companies make different
choices. Once they get my belt loosened, you know where they're going.
Oh, look who's a big boy now. So the house you've already got, the car you've already got, that wasn't driven by somebody else trying to get your money?
Not trying to get more money out of me.
They
pay three times more because my emissions are all of a sudden doing more damage than ever.
Do you think you should be able to pollute at will?
How do I know I'm polluting?
I'll tell you how. Go in your garage.
every instance of pollution should be accompanied by a leukemia dead kid so that you could prove that you were polluting? I mean, come on. How do you know you're polluting?
No, go in
your garage and suck your tailpipe.
There's a test. We'll talk to you in 20 minutes.
And don't worry. Even in the future.
I don't know why this guy is irritating.
Even in the future, when we all drive electric cars, you can still have your collectible gas-burning car. I saw it on Star Trek. I mean, you can still...
Actually, Kirk drives a... Oh, can't tell you that.
Guys.
You know, you should have seen the movie.
I know.
All right.
People keep giving away
Bob,
stuff.
Bob, don't ruin the movie.
I'm sorry about that.
But Kirk, in the first 5 minutes.
Kirk does have a classic car.
Global warming doesn't exist, but don't ruin Star Trek. It's the perfect call.
All right, so do you see where we're going with this?
The climate is so cyclical. How long have the records been kept? It is so cyclical.
All right, let me put it to you this way. Let's say I buy your premise, because we want you to buy science, but let's say I buy your premise that it's all cyclical. It is getting warmer anyway. A polar ice capsule melt. Billions of people will be dislocated. But it's all natural, and it's not caused by me, the human. Let's say I give you that, and I buy that. Okay?
Right.
Wouldn't it be better to find free, cheap, clean energy and sell it to everybody as a consumerist capitalist society, and so that you could have more and better things and have absolutely no smoke in the air?
Absolutely, but don't scare me to death so I have to pay five times as much.
The administration, they want to give money back to consumers as they pass this law. You know, the idea is that...
Why did Bob pay 10 times as much for his Prius then?
Well, actually, it wasn't really that much of a premium for a Prius, but I do believe that there are tax breaks to encourage you to do things that are friendlier.
And right now, you want to scream and deal on a Prius. I mean, they're selling them at dealer cost right now because gas and down.
This is all free choice. You know, nobody's forcing anybody to buy anything. We're just changing economic incentives, or hopefully we are, and then we're going to let the market take care of it.
I mean, right now, for the last 20 years, the economic incentive has been to rape people in the stock market. But no, you didn't complain about that.
I made money off it, though.
There you go. It's been really a pleasure. Thank you for your call. Would you take some emails if people want to email you? What's your email address?
Sure. MOONECC. At yahoo.com.
We'll post that at bobrivers.com. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Chris. Let's get you back sometime, because all we talked about was global warming.
Yeah, well, that'll do it.
Yeah. He's at the Science Center tonight, the Pacific Science Center, in the Ames Theater?
Ames, I'm not actually
Ames?
Sure.
Okay, I was calling it James because I thought it was a typo.
But the Pacific Science Center.
That's 7 o'clock tonight. The forum is Dumb, Getting Dumber, The Cost of Scientific Illiteracy.
Thinking that he's vital while he sits on his couch watching American Idol.
Boring people.
7 things you should never discuss because everyone finds them boring. Great meal you once had is one of them. You start talking about, this fish was blah, blah, blah. Apparently, most people find that boring.
And I'm guilty of that.
The route you took to get there. We were going to take I-5, but it was backed up.
So there with that one.
Yeah. The recent changes to your child's nap schedule. Unless you're talking to a child psychologist or someone with a kid the exact same age as yours, talking about your children.
Guilty.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we love you, so we sit there and go, oh.
Right. Well, that's great news.
That's two.
Times for you
that
guys.
That happens when they're two.
Yeah.
Another thing you should never talk about, the latest additions to your wine cellar. If you're bragging about your wine cellar, even people with wine cellars don't care.
They can't share in that joy. You can't pop that cork.
Yeah, unless you're going to pour a glass.
Makes you sound stuck up.
Yeah, exactly.
Do not ever talk about your tennis game. You are not Andre Agassi, and everybody knows it. Once you win the U.S. Open, feel free to talk tennis as much as you want. Until then, shut up.
Unless you're Eric Super Pleats Corbin. If you ever want to talk tennis or wine, though, there's not a more fascinating
Eric night. Will talk about any of this stuff with you, by the way.
I had a great tennis match yesterday. Buddy.
Shut up.
How'd you get there?
All right. And here's one How'd you get there?
Yeah.
Number one, the route I took to get here.
In my Prius.
Yes.
I-5 was backed up.
Yeah, so we hopped off on the 167.
All right. The plot of... excuse me. I got to do this. Don't ever talk with phlegm in your mouth about a plot of a movie, play, or book. Now, I do that all the time. I hope entertainingly, but... They say it's boring for you to tell other people about a movie, play, or book.
I think that's just a choosing your audience carefully thing.
And the level storyteller you are.
And choosing the storyteller.
Right, right.
A lot of people, like my wife tries to explain something. Let's move on. she'll start talking about something, but in terms like she doesn't know that she's not filling me in with the details. She'll go, and then the thing. And then there was a whoosh, and then another thing. And I'll go, great.
You have to ever look real hard at them, like, I'm listening and hard,
work hard. Like faking an orgasm, faking listening.
Yeah.
Keeping your eyes focused, you know. It's like, oh,
well, this is really interesting, honey.
Meanwhile, you're like, I got a half a meat lover's peach in the trunk of my car.
Maybe that's my problem. I'm too honest about that stuff. If I'm interested, I'm very interested.
And then you start overthinking it, at least I do, because I'm working so hard to listen, I'm nervous about not catching the details and when to jump in and ask the pertinent question that proves I'm listening.
You get nervous about a lot of stuff.
I do.
Human interaction, don't you?
Yeah.
Is it because are you a people pleaser?
I think I am. I try to go out of my way to please.
Why can't you please yourself by giving yourself an honest answer to that question?
I just did. I said I'm a people pleaser.
I mean, he wasn't sure what was the right answer. He wasn't sure what I wanted to hear.
Right.
What do I want to hear now?
Don't just give me what's real, dude.
I think that's real.
Okay.
I'm also not a very definite people, you know, guy. I hedge. I think and I...
Right.
You know.
You hardly ever give an absolute answer to
right. Him. I'm not an absolute person.
But he was absolutely sure that he agreed with not being absolute.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Razor sharp hedging.
All right. What's left? Apparently...
That's probably something else that bores people, too.
Yeah.
Number one, all that.
Psychoanalyzing yourself.
A dream. Don't talk about dreams. Most people think their dreams are profound and interesting, but in most cases, you're just recalling a bunch of things that didn't actually happen. And it's time now for Now and Zen, ladies and gentlemen. Every day we try to come up with a quote from many, many thousands of years ago, or at least couple thousand years ago, and a quote from modern times. See which one you prefer. Now and Zen. Now and Zen. Now would be good. Okay.
Anytime now and Zen.
Sooner rather than later. All right, which one do you want first? The old one or the new?
Yesterday we went old first. Why don't we go new today?
All right, new quote first.
Now.
If we don't succeed, we run the risk of failure.
I know that one.
It's Dan Quayle.
Yeah, it is. That's a classic.
If we don't succeed, we run the risk of... Now, what have we learned from this? Nothing.
Be careful who you appoint as vice president, what we learned.
All right. Here's a Zen quote. This one comes from Aristotle. So it'll be 1,500 years ago or so. Approximately 384 B.C., he says, all human actions have one or more of these seven causes: chance, nature, compulsion, habit, reason, passion, or desire. Pretty deep stuff, isn't it?
I'm trying to think of one that doesn't, and I think everything fits in one of those categories.
All human actions have one or more of these seven causes. Either happen by chance, complete accident. Mm-hmm. This is like serenity prayer stuff. It happened by chance.
Let it go.
There's nothing you can do about it. Yeah. If it happened by nature, there's nothing you can do about it.
Nature calls.
If it happened by compulsion, you can let the compulsion go. If it happened by habit, you can surrender the habit. Mm-hmm. If it happened by reason, presumably it's good and you wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It happened by passion, as long as it wasn't compulsive or habitual. Probably good.
Or a crime.
And if it happened by desire, you have to look at the outcome of what you did and decide whether it was good or not, right?
Yeah, he's pretty much covered it all.
Is there any other thing that would cause a human action?
What would an itch, what a scratch be caused by? Is that nature? Compulsion?
Nature.
Okay. Wow.
Run a few tests by me. Oh.
Burping is a...
Let's talk about being sick if you want.
Okay.
Because being sick could happen by either by nature, by chance,
Or the result of desire.
Or the result of desire could be caused by a compulsion.
Doc, what is this? Is this ever going to go away? I don't know.
Right? So some of these things are, it's a mystery. You have
chance
no idea.
Desire, yeah.
I can't think of a single action that doesn't fit in there.
That's from Aristotle. I mean, I don't think you're going to hear a lot of Aristotle throughout the rest of your day, so we're happy to bring some of it to you. Larry in Duncan, British Columbia. Hello, Larry.
Hey, it's actually Terry, but good morning to you guys.
Good morning,
how
Terry.
You doing?
Good morning, A. How are you, A?
Pretty good, actually.
Okay.
Got some sun today, so hopefully things are turning around here.
Are you listening to us online, or do you pick up our signal in Duncan?
Pick up your signal. I'm sitting in my car waiting for a slinger truck to get to the job site here.
Good deal. All right. How are things in Canada? We haven't had a Canadian call in a little while.
Actually, pretty good. I think the weather, more than anything, is just kind of holding us down a little bit here. But I think we're going to be getting into spring pretty quick. So, you know, I think we're starting to see the smiles on people's faces again.
Yeah, here too. All right. So Larry, Terry, you called with a quote. Is this now or Zen?
I think this would be Zen.
All right, it's an old quote. Who came up with it?
I believe it's Confucius, actually.
Confucius say,
the palest ink is stronger than the best memory. It's something like that. I should have had it written down, but...
I've heard that.
Living it out, aren't you, buddy? Yeah.
That's like if you put it on your MySpace page and your wife sees it, it would have been better if she forgot that you ever existed. Something like that.
Wow.
That's a modern version of it.
Still like me.
Yeah.
Hey, Terry, can I ask him a real quick question?
Sure.
What is a slinger truck?
A slinger truck is a large truck. It's kind of like a dump truck, except for the fact that it's got a rubber belt on the back of it that will actually sling the rock, road-based gravel, whatever it happens to be that you're using, could be topsoil, and it'll actually throw the stuff about 60 feet off the end of the truck, so that you don't have to try and get dump trucks into hard-to-reach accesses and stuff like that.
Wow.
Thank you.
You did want to know that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Aristotle, paving. Same show.
Same thing.
All right, we have a Dear Flabby letter. Limited time. Let's see if you can help this person. A local person with a local business. Dear Flabby, I have a dilemma. I own two coffee drive-thrus here in Seattle. I don't want to say where. In these economic times, business is down and money is tight. And as a result, my business, my latte stands, are on a super tight budget. Unfortunately, this means we occasionally run out of a flavor or a cup size. Most of our customers are fabulous and very understanding. They pick an alternate flavor for their latte, and they don't mind if their 12-ounce drink is in a 16-ounce cup. It's happened a couple of times. But there is one customer, a repeat customer, who constantly reminds me how frustrating it is for her if we run out of something. I have apologized repeatedly, thanked her for her understanding, of which she has none. I've tried to explain how I'm doing my best with decreased revenue, blah, blah. My question is, do I tell this lady to not come back? I know the customer is always supposed to be right, but as a business owner, I am being tested. I value my customers, but why should I endure a customer I don't like? Anybody else in business out there ever told a customer, don't need your business, don't come back?
Signed, Howard.
No. When he sold the Sonics, yes.
Right,
1-800-252-1025. Has anybody done this? And does anybody think that it's principally wrong to do so? Amy in Paulsbo. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi. I work at a bar in Paulsbo. I probably don't want to say which one. But anyway, we had a customer who was a very good regular, and he was just a jerk. And every single day he would come in and he would say, you know, criticize the bartender, didn't matter which one it was, about how we would pour our drinks and how we were doing our job. And he was just, he was rude to the other customers as well. And I finally just had it and told him, you know, don't come back. And he hasn't. And everybody at the bar is happy.
So So he was good in every way. He tipped well. He
Oh, no, no. He was a terrible tipper. Terrible. And he bragged.
Let me ask you a question, Amy.
Mm-hmm?
If he had tipped you really well, would you have put up with the abuse?
No, because it wasn't worth it.
Well, how much are we talking here? What is it like?
Well, his tab would be about $15, and he would, if I was lucky, he would slide me a dollar and ask me to give him four quarters so he can give me two of them.
Oh. I'd kick him out just for doing that, even if he's the nicest guy
but
in the
if his
world.
Tab was 15 and he left an extra 10 or a fiver every single time, but he was a complete jerk, you're telling me that you would have kicked him out? I don't think so.
Yeah, I would, because I've had other customers that have tipped me well that are jerks, and I slide the money back and say, you know what, your attitude's not worth it.
Wow, look at you.
Yep.
All right.
So, yeah, it's just to me, if they're being a jerk, you know, if you try, and you just get to the point where you say, you know, enough's enough.
Fire the customer. Thank you, Amy. Marvin in Puyallup, go ahead.
Hi. Say, I bring in a customer perspective. I had a business fire me, cleaning business, cleaning my house. Yeah. I seem to always be having something wrong with the cleaning job every time I come home. And so I'd call them and let them know. And probably more of a picky person than most. And it got to the point after 2 or 3 months, the business just said, you know, look, we're obviously not going to be able to make you happy, so we need to terminate our arrangement.
How did you feel?
At the time, I felt slighted, but after thinking about it, you know, I thought maybe I was a little bit too tough. Maybe I should have taken a little different approach with the business. Maybe I should have tried being a little more understanding. They were a new business, and they were really trying to make a go of their business, and I was probably causing them a lot of grief.
All right. Thank you, Martin. Marvin, excuse me. Sue in North Seattle has had to fire a customer. What kind of business?
It was a cleaning business.
Ah, was it this guy?
Specifically for the last, no, I didn't have him, no. It was specifically for that very reason. Every time, and I went 5 times to this person. Every time I went, she had some little picky thing, and it got to the point, I finally, the 5th time I walked in, I took all my stuff out and started to clean, she came to complain, and I said, listen, I obviously am not what you need. You obviously need somebody that you can dictate to as far as cleaning. I said, when I applied here, I said, I told you these are the things that I do and you were agreeable and now you're not so agreeable. And I said, it really frustrates me to come here and just wrecks my day and I don't want my day wrecked.
Wow. What was she picking on?
Oh, my God. She had special cleaning products she had to use here, use there, special rags, special this, special that. I mean, it was more.
If she cared so much, why didn't she get down on her own ass and clean herself?
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
You know, but I mean, I did. I just told her, and it was fine. And I still kept the same. I had another person in the same building, still kept that person without any problems. And
she wanted to micromanage you as a cleaner. Do you think she looked down on you because you were cleaning?
Well, of course, she was an investment, real estate investment.
Ooh. Oh, I wonder where she's living now, by the way.
There's the ingredient.
Maybe
right
you could
there,
clean
people.
Out the cardboard box she's living in.
Right. There you go.
Her car gets pretty messy.
Thank you, Sue.
Big Cadillac.
Rich is in Seattle. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how you guys doing today?
All right.
Yeah, all right. You got a number of issues going on. The first one is that I'd like to point out the customer is not always right. But what I teach people is they are always the customer.
Ah. Mm. I'm with you.
So, and in this case, I wonder why this person keeps going back. You know, we live in Seattle, and there's coffee stands every corner. So why does this person that keeps complaining going back all the time to the same place?
I'll tell you why, because where else can you abuse somebody for $3? You've got to drive to Reno to have that kind of control over people.
Well, I think you're onto something.
I'm telling you.
It's basically, boy, we're not going to have a lot of time to talk to more people, but basically here's the deal. The way you handle this customer, if you buy that the customer's always right, by the way, and Roger is also on the phone. Roger, you agree with this, right? Customer's always right.
That is absolutely right, and Rich brought up a very good point. Because even you have to believe that the customer is always right, and you have to adjust.
So how do you maintain your dignity? I say you joke with them. You bust their balls for being busting yours.
Exactly.
Yeah. I say life's too short and send that biatch down the road.
Your lifeline.
All right. Well, that,
even if they're wrong.
No, we're not going to decide. But, hey, no each way. One of you gets to decide how to run your own business. You'd send
Later,
her pack.
Gator. I'd send a pack, and life's too short to take crap off some rich snob for $3 a cup. Forget about
it. The lonely person that needs somebody to talk to. It's a drive-thru.
It probably comes from a dysfunctional family. I do, too. I can give her the fight.
Card. I'd buy her a Starbucks gift card and send her down the road.
That's it. The NBC Police show Southland has been a hit since its mid-season premiere, and one of the big reasons is Regina King. She plays Detective Lydia Adams. Now, we've talked to Regina before, and you've seen her in many blockbuster films, including Living Proof, opposite Harry Connick Jr., Jerry Maguire, opposite Cuba Gooding. Oh, how about Ray, Cinderella Story? My favorite role she had was Enemy of the State. We talked to her about that before. How Stellar Got a Groove Back, all of that. Regina King, welcome back to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Thanks, guys, for having me. Can I just say that that is absolutely the best intro I have ever had? That's pretty cool. I like how you have the music in the background.
Well, you're very welcome. And you know, I don't know if you remember we talked, because, you know, we talked to a lot of people, but we talked before about when you were Will Smith's wife in that hot lingerie in the garage and just just smoking hot. It was great. And now Spike's watching you every week.
Fantasizing is an accurate descriptive.
On Southland. Now, I want to be, maybe if that was a great intro, but I want to suggest something to you, and I would love it if I was the first person to suggest it, but I bet I'm not.
Okay.
I think the role that you are born to play at some point in the TV movie, or maybe the big screen movie, is First Lady of the United States.
You know what? You're not the first person. That is, like, absolutely an honor.
Damn. Well, you look a little bit like her.
Well, I mean, that is a huge compliment, because she's a fit woman, and I'm one who really believes the importance of being fit and staying fit and keeping everything tight. She's just probably about 4 inches taller than I am.
We have to find a short Brock. We could do that.
Short Brock, there you go.
Yeah, but short Brock man.
You've worked with Tom Cruise. You know how they adjust height on film. Yeah. So that's not going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I heard they make people who work with Tom Cruise walk in trenches. Is that true?
That's funny. No.
I know.
They make him walk on something.
My mistake.
Yeah.
He walks on an apple box. They just line a bunch of apple boxes.
So, Regina, how you doing? You're amazing in this show. Powerful character, powerful woman. How's your real life? How's life?
Life is really good now. We found out that we were picked up for 13 episodes. So that's great. You know, now the son and I can take a trip somewhere that is not in California.
Ah, because if you didn't have the TV money coming in next year, you would have to be more conservative, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, I hope that I'm like most parents out there, try to make sure you keep the home front tight, and so kids are like, oh, Mom, are we going to lose our house?
Well, there's a lot of that, a lot of that going on, especially in SoCal, huh?
Well, yeah, and you know, if you watch TV, if you like get wind of just 5 minutes of the news, you know, you see people losing their houses and their jobs all the time. And even, you know, though you try to keep your kids away from that, kids can't help but receive that, and they kind of like look at their parents like, ooh, what's going? That's not going to be us, is it?
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a Los Angeles native. You were born in Los Angeles, weren't you?
Born and raised.
Mm. So you probably feel a strong connection to L.A. through its ups and downs, good times, with all the cool things about it and with some of the scars. And what's it like playing a detective during, you know, in one of the hottest cities in America as far as crime goes?
Well, that's the thing that just, you know, one, because, it, you know, the show takes place in L.A., was one of the things that attracted me to the show. And then, two, the fact that LA has gotten such a bad rep when it comes to law enforcement. And when we started this show, we've been meeting so many officers that are retired and off duty when we were working with them, and I just kind of got this newfound respect for the law enforcement, because I was probably one of those that felt the same as a lot of people, like, whatever, you know, cops, they could care less. But when you get to know them and just what it takes to be a cop, you know, you just get a respect. Your respect level changes.
Huh. Regina, I've watched every episode of this show, and I got to tell you, my wife and I, we love this show. It's so well written. But as far as giving the police department a better image in L.A., it's, do you guys draw from fact when you do your storylines? I mean, there was one episode, the Sally in the Alley. If you find a body in an alley and nobody gives a rat's patootie about finding out who she is, and they said there was a 10-year backlog on getting cases processed. Is that kind of stuff really going on?
I don't know if there's a 10-year backlog, but as far as a backlog on cases and getting them processed, yes, that is something that goes on in every police department, and it's something that, you know, a lot of times is, you know, they try to cover it up. Unfortunately, with the Sally in the Alley thing, that is true. You know, like, you have detectives that are really passionate about cases like my character, and, you know, sometimes you're lucky where the detective, just after years and years of not having support from, you know, whatever precinct you're a part of, still continue to, you know, investigate cases with passion. But then you have some detectives that are so burnt because of the way, you know, they're treated. You know, they really, you know, want to get a case done, and then come to find out, okay, we get pulled off of a case because something else it takes more precedent, but it's not necessarily because it is a case that means more to the family that whatever crime has happened to, but as far as the city is concerned, it means more to do some damage control so that we don't get a bad rep. And
yeah, in that episode, a tourist got mugged, and that was on the news, so they pulled you off the murder case to work that.
Right,
well done.
Because it's better to...
Regina, I have a question, if I may. I know our time is short, but is this show going to go like the way of NYPD Blue, where they make you get half naked once in a while? I'm just curious.
Oh,
I think optimism.
You need to watch next Thursday's episode as well.
Ah, okay.
A little something. Yeah.
All right, and I don't mean that in any kind of a, you know, leering way. Just, well, as long as it's artistically necessary.
When it comes time for renewal the next time, yeah. You know.
Regina, we're obviously big fans. Thank you very much for taking a little time with us, Regina King in Los Angeles.